You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Jason, you got your coffee this morning?
I had one cup of coffee, and I'll probably get another one on the way out the door. How about you?
Are you Jason today, or are you Mr. Thibodeau today?
They never call me Mr. Thibodeau because they would botch it every single time. So it's Mr. Jason.
Mr. Jason. So you're Mr. Yeah. Jason today. Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right, cool.
Last week, I did have a class that wanted to call me Mr. T, so then we had to go into that whole spiel and talk about Mr. T, and I wasn't having it, so.
Do they know who Mr. T is?
No, that's what I say. We had to go into the whole spiel. We had to YouTube it and everything, and so, but I mean, my kids don't even know who Mr. T is, so.
There you go. Okay, cool. All right. Since the last time we talked, there's been some things that have gone on, and it's just date related. It's nothing like groundbreaking or anything like that. It's just Iowa hunting season as of Saturday is over.
Yeah,
I'm done hunting, period. And I kind of just did a little quick reflection this morning while I was having my first cup of coffee, and I'm just like, you know what? Not a bad year. Right?
Yeah.
Is it my best year I've ever had? No. Is it the worst year I've ever had? Definitely not. Did I have a fun year in the tree stand chasing turkey and deer and shed hunting and all that stuff and doing what I did? Absolutely. I don't want to say 10 out of 10, but it's definitely like an 8. It's just a great year, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can agree. It's like this time of year, it almost... You know, we come out of that new year and you're all gung-ho. You have these new hopes and dreams and goals and everything. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, college football ends and then deer season ends. And then your professional football team gets kicked out of the playoffs by the local sports team, you know. So, like, it all comes crashing down. Yeah. And in a way, though, like, I reflect the same way. Like, my season was a success in a nutshell. My son got his first deer. I got, you know, a nice buck. And got to spend some time with the girls and stuff. Did I check all the boxes? There's always another box that, you know, could have been checked. But moving forward, you know, you get anxious about it. Like, what's on the agenda for this year and where can I invest some time that I didn't put in last year? And what can I learn from last year or this past season that maybe I can go forward with and try something different? Maybe it's being more mobile. Maybe it's creating more mock scrapes or maybe you take a different avenue. Like, maybe I've utilized trail cameras too much and maybe I need to go back to woodsmanship. So,
yeah. A lot of stuff that could happen between now and next deer season on how we can improve ourselves.
Absolutely.
But today, I would like to talk maybe a little bit about how we can help improve the status of deer hunting in our country, or maybe we start to talk about the word conservation and what that means to us. We talk about what getting involved means. And I think that's different for every person and every hunter out there. And every hunter has a different take on that. But it's almost political in a way. And what I mean by that is, let's just say, for example, let's say I'm a Republican and you're a Republican. And this is just an example. Your idea of what it means to be for that party is different than what I feel.
right? Or if you're going to vote on a specific thing and why a person feels a specific way about a specific topic in politics is almost how conservation is as well. And I want to talk about that today. But before we do, we got to send a huge shout out to one of our partners here on the How to Hunt Deer podcast, and that is Code Blue Sense. Code Blue Sense has just released their brand new products for 2026. And the best thing to do is to head on over to CodeBlueSense.com and take a look at all of the different packages that they have. They've really went hard this year in bundling. So a whole bunch of products that can be used together, like the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit, along with some other like scents that you would put down on the scrape itself, that pair up nicely with the rope and the preorbital gel. So go to codebluescents.com, take a look at their real and synthetic deer urines. Take a look at their scent elimination products. Our favorite product, Jason, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. Stay tuned for, I want to say probably this spring sometime before green up, before turkey season. Me and you are probably going to throw a couple really quick raw videos of how we set up our mock scrapes and share that information with people. But outside that, go to codebluescents.com. And if you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code HTH20 for 20% off. All right. Jason.
Yeah.
What does the word conservation mean to you?
I would say preservation and saving.
Okay. I like that. Conservation, preservation and saving of what?
Oh, the natural resources.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Now, Did you have that same thought about, like, that was your definition of conservation 10 years ago, too?
You know, I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to answer 10 years, but I'm going to go back further when I started. So I would have started bow hunting in roughly 2000. And I didn't grow up in a hunting family or anything like that. I just took a like to hunting. Mm. And I wanted to challenge myself, so I picked up a bow. Well, conservation then to me was like very, very new. It was a new term, you know. I mean, I always heard about, you know, some CRP ground. You always heard about like public areas and stuff, but it took several years until I realized that you could actually hunt on public ground. It took several years to realize what CRP programs were, several years to understand what the conservation was on these public grounds,
right?
And even on public, you know, or private grounds, you know. So for me, 10 years ago, we would have been in 2016, I think my efforts were just as good, maybe even sometimes better as far as conservation goes, because, you know, there was something about probably for me that mind switch or that flip was probably in around 2012, 2013, when I started to realize, man, if I want to shoot big deer, or I want to see more deer, or I want to help balance the herd or give them something, you know, that they can come back to year in and year out and not wipe out herds of deer, it started to click somewhere in there for me, probably 12, 13, maybe 14 years ago.
Yeah. And so, there, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a big push maybe like 5 years ago where, and I felt, I don't want to say I fell victim to it, but I definitely said the words, hunting is conservation. So therefore, because I hunt, I am a conservationist. And I said that and I supported that. But then I started to realize that just because you hunt does not make you a conservationist.
Right.
Okay. Like for me, I was like, okay, I'm just saying words. What action am I actually doing in supporting? And so I kind of opened my eyes and was just like, man, conservation to me isn't words. It's actions. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not only actions, but it's also in a way, I want to get your thoughts on this. Would you say that being a conservationist or being active in conservations means in conservation, or I don't know. Would you say that R3 would be part of conservation or not? Like, getting more people involved in the act of hunting? Is that conservation?
I believe so, because, I mean, everybody takes a look at hunting in a different way.
Right.
You know, so for you and me, with the evolution of where we have become with our kids and everything like that, are getting our kids involved. Now, each kid is going to have a different perspective. Like, one might like bow hunting, one might like gun hunting, but then there's also the side of one might like doing food plots, one might join a local archery club, you know? So it expands from there, because everybody has a different goal and everybody has a different perspective. I think when you do entertain the idea of getting people involved, that also expands the ideas. It's just like, I mean, I think we said a little bit earlier, you know, like the whole political thing. It does become political to some extent, because there are different opinions.
Right, right. And this is something that I'm trying to figure out right now. One thing you hear a lot about right now is the lack of access for hunters. And now there are programs out there like the R3 movement, which helps. What are the three R's? It's recruit, retain, and reintroduce hunters onto the landscape. Well, if we have those programs and that's great, and maybe you even have the access for them, a lot of these programs will go 2 years, right? But you let them out into the wild and they're past their 2 year window where someone finds ground for them. How many of those hunters are actually sticking around because they have found access? And I'm using Iowa as an example, where even hunters who have been hunting as long as I have are having trouble finding ground to hunt unless you're willing to pay for it.
Right.
Right. So I'm still trying to figure out, why, in the last handful of years, there is this huge push to try to just like market hunters to the landscape, in which the landscape may not be able to support the amount of hunters that it's trying to bring in because it's difficult right now. Does that make sense? Or am rambling?
It makes sense. And I think, you know, part of that is one of the roots of all evil, and it's money, you know. I mean, money dictates a lot of things, and people love control and people love money. I think for me, looking at it is, you know, when I think of introducing somebody into hunting and trying to bring in some more conservationists, there's an act of teaching, and I'm going to use a simple pun today, you know, with teaching these kids different avenues with it. You know, my goals for my kids were to simply introduce them into hunting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then once we've sat in the blind or tree stand enough, and then they've seen enough deer, now they've had the opportunity, and then they can make the choice from there. But it didn't stop with that. Like, we went to archery clubs, and we started to go to NWTF turkey banquets, you know, and we expanded it with doing food plots. And so my introduction into hunting for them was teaching them everything along the way that made it, I want to say full circle, but in a way that's a complete hunter to me.
Right. Right. I like that. I think for the current hunter, and I'm not talking to the people who are like, oh dude, I want to find out where I want to go shoot a deer because it's the meat. Right. Mm-hmm. Welcome to hunting. I'm all for that, right? I'm all for the guy who wants to get out there and experience hunting. And I want to welcome any hunter that finds this podcast or any, whatever their journey into hunting is, welcome. I want you here. For this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo, shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Me, I think that means something different because I am already a hunter and I have children who are interested, children and friends who are interested in it, or not friends, children and my kids' friends who are interested in it. And so by default, I want to take them. But for me, I'm not actively going out and using any platform that I have to just be like, if you're interested, look me up and I will do whatever it takes, because I don't have time for that. I have time, like my energy as far as quote unquote recruitment is, and maybe it's not recruitment if it's your own kids. I don't know. I would say it probably is, because it's just another generation of hunters.
Well, it's not only that, but I mean, if you walked up to one of your sons and said, hey, you want to play football this year? And he responds with, well, I do, but I don't. Well, now it is a recruitment, you know, because you're looking at your son and you're like, I know you have the ability to play football. I want to give you this opportunity, but it's still your choice, you know? Right. So it is recruitment in a way. One thing I was thinking about too, when we start talking about power and money and that whole scheme, I think as hunters, just like a lot of other things that we do in life, you know, we become, and maybe you can say this and maybe you can't, but you know, for years it was always like, I can't share my locations. I can't share my knowledge. I don't want to give my secrets away, you know? And then there comes a point where it's like, there's a lot of selfish in that. And like this year was one, I mean, I've been doing it for several years, but this year was a little bit different for me. I took my bonus daughter to probably my best spot. And I wanted her to experience deer hunting. You know, she has this drive to want to hunt. You know, she's telling me she wants to turkey hunt. You know, and I'm like, the only way she's really going to see it is by seeing the best that there is to offer.
Yeah.
And so I took her to it. But if rewind probably back to that 15-year time frame, I would have been like, hard no. We're not. I'm not taking it to my best spot. We're not going to ruin it. We're not going to booger it up. And it was selfish.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. I feel I'm doing my job by introducing my kids, knowing that it's just going to put more pressure on the properties that I hunt. Okay.
Right.
And
right.
I'm okay with that.
Yep.
Because, you know, I want them to have a better experience than what I did hunting. So as far as recruitment is concerned, you know, I think that means something different. Again, something different for different people.
Yeah.
If you all of a sudden were like, I think I want to try hunting. I think I want to find out where my meat comes from. I think, you know, like I don't like the way beef or pork is processed and I want to have more control over what I eat. Yes. Then Google is probably a good spot to start, you know, or having, going to a friend and, you know, out of the blue. I also think as a hunter yourself, it is your responsibility to help with the next generation, whether that is a niece or a nephew or your own kids or maybe your wife or things like that. And I think it plays a role in this whole thing, because if there's not a generation to follow us, then what value does the natural resource have anymore?
Well,
right? It has none.
Yeah, exactly. And this may throw a wrench into things too, but you know, we can say hunter and meat and all that, and then look at the other side of like the ones that don't like hunting. And we may go down that road of like, maybe I'm a backpack hiker, right? So when you say hunting is conservation, is a backpack hiker a conservationist? You know, and at what level does that play together? And can you cater to that just as they cater to you?
Yeah.
That's a political thing right there that, you know, I think sometimes gets really thrown in there and we can't support each other because of it. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, and this is where there's a lot of, for those who are new, who are listening to this, it's weird because this is one place where hunters fight each other.
Right.
We have these groups of people who are like, why are we doing R3? Because there's no places to send them. And then you have another group of people who are usually involved with the conservation efforts and the organizations who are saying, hey, we want more hunters. Well, it's easy for them to say that because they're an organization that relies on members and money and things like that, which is kind of this transition for me. And this is where my personal thoughts have changed over the years. And I want to get your take on this too. And that is, I used to be like, I feel we should support these giant organizations. I think, and giant is relative, right? So like, I would love for like the National Deer Alliance, or National Deer Association, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Wild Turkey Federation, the Mule Deer Foundation. Like, the list goes on and on about Pheasants Forever, Whitetails Unlimited. That's an asterisk for me, because I think Whitetails Unlimited is extremely local and plays a good, like, I like what they're doing. But I went through a period of time where I was supporting these companies or these organizations. And I was like, and I still think what they're doing is a greater good or a greater net good than that. And so what I mean by that is I feel like what they're doing is they're doing more good than anything bad. Right. So that's still good. They're growing attention and things like that. But one thing I have felt over the years is that as you get involved in a conservation organization on a national level, and you send your money or your membership or things like that the further away that you are sending your money, the further, like the least likely that money is coming back to you and your environment and where you hunt and locally like that. Right. So one thing that I has always felt, and this is one thing that I would love to talk to the hunt, everybody who's listening. I feel like if you want to quote unquote, get involved with something as local as humanly possible that helps support the public lands that you hunt or the waters that you fish or the county, even the county that you live in. And I'll speak on Iowa really specific here a second. Majority of the counties, some of them might be merged together, but majority of the counties that are here in Iowa have a conservation board. And they do stuff quite frequently throughout the year, whether that is on the landscape or have conservation banquets or things like that. So for example, a long time ago, I helped build wood duck houses. Okay. This was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I helped build a couple wood duck houses, and then we went into the marsh and we put them up. I drove by those wood duck houses and got to see generations of wood ducks and baby wood ducks come out of those boxes every year. So yeah. With my own energy and my own time, I put into that environment and I got to witness my conservation effort every time I drove by that.
Right.
Okay. That, I think that gets more people excited about conservation than sending a check to somebody and saying, okay, well, now I have contributed because now I'm a member, right?
Right.
I think those two things are not the same.
I 100% agree. The one thing I was just thinking about, you know, and I don't want to use any names, so I'm not going to, mm-hmm. but you know, you yep. constantly every year get the flyers in the mail or the mailers, and you got the stickers or the self-addressed address labels and everything for these companies, and you haven't even spent a dollar. Right. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to coax you into sending your money. Yep. Well, to me, that kind of tells me that they're wasting a lot of money by trying to buy you mm-hmm. into there. You know, so what value is your dollar when it's being sent to places like that? Now, I have seen where these big corporations or big organizations, if you will, have done benefits to places like in Nebraska. I've seen it multiple spots, and it says, you know, paid for by so and so. Right. That's great. But the local level, if it's for you in your state, you know, we've been to like the NWTF banquets. I'm gonna use that for example. It's kind of like the Whitetails Unlimited. Each of those has like a chapter, you know, and in that within that chapter, it's like Pheasants Forever. There's a chapter that they do something within your region For each year, there's a project, you know, and I know like the NWTF in our area that I was supporting a lot is they would take disabled kids and they would have them on a spring turkey hunt, you know, which to me, maybe it's not conservation, but it's also, it's kind of like introducing a different level, you know, and just the joy of that in itself is something else. So, I will also add, and this completely could be wrong for some people, the way they look at it. You know, we always talk about the conservation and preservation of public lands. You know, there's a lot to be said with private lands as well. And one of the biggest things with the conservation of private lands that's hard is big farmers gather up as much as they can. And their end goal is obviously to make money. So the more clear ground that they have, the easier it is to farm and more money they make. But that doesn't always help the hunter, and that doesn't always help conservation. You know, so for me, on ground that we've had and owned and stuff, if we take trees out, we'll put 10 times as many trees in, or we'll put 10 times the value in. And so there's conservation in that too. Plus, I'm also teaching that to our kids and so on and so forth, friends involved and my brothers, whatever. I think sometimes that's where, you know, the conservation and the preservation of public land is huge, obviously, because we all would lose something if that goes away. But I think we can't let the private land sales, you know, go back to Iowa, you know, where we're talking about gobs of land being bought up and sold at high dollar and making it a very expensive sport. There also has to be the preservation of that land. Otherwise, it gets sold off and now becomes farm ground or whatever, you know.
Right, right. I feel that. I feel that. I think that, you know, and I don't want to sit here and say that the bigger organizations don't have a value, because they do. And here's why. They have a value because some of these organizations are heavily involved in the politics, and they're in the Capitol buildings, and they're in Washington, D.C., and they have legislators, like where they talk with legislators and, you know, representatives and senators and things like that in multiple states throughout the country. And they have, they work with lobbyists to help fight for our rights to hunt and keep the anti-hunters and at bay, and, you know, like insurance companies at bay. And, you know, cause right now there are a lot of people that go beyond anti-hunting, that are trying to get like white-tailed deer numbers up. They don't give a shit about the conservation efforts. They just want them off the landscape. So there's less car accidents and there's less crop damage and things like that. And they're blaming it all on the white-tailed deer. Meanwhile, maybe that's not accurate. So we have groups of people in Washington, D.C. fighting for us. And when you donate your money to some of these, that's where some of that dollar goes as well. So
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 taxpaying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
So you're like heading in the direction of, so I've been working on this little piece of stuff that maybe we could use in the future and thought we could have several episodes. I kind of took a few states and I started breaking down conservation of them and just a little bit of knowledge for each state. So I'm just going to take some notes off of Illinois here. So the white-tailed deer conservation is led by the DNR in Illinois. And it's data-driven decisions from deer vehicle accidents and public input to adjust the regulations. Okay, so reducing deer vehicle accidents and crop damage is crucial. Landowners, hunters, and quote-unquote other stakeholders provide input and input influencing these policies. So, you know, when you talk about the politics of it, there is so many organizations that are quote-unquote stakeholders that influence the conservation of it through politics.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not just us, right?
No.
That are involved. And we got to find ways to work together with these people. And then, you know, I understand that you got to start, we got to start thinking about shutting this because you got to get to work today, shutting this down so you can get to work. But I feel like if you want to get involved, it is a no-brainer to be on a network level. We haven't done it in a couple years, but there was when I was involved in this different conservation organization back in the day called 2% for Conservation, the network was signed up for it, and we got a kickback, or we didn't get a kickback, but we got like recognized for certain amount of our time and dollar went to conservation efforts, and then we stepped away, but we still continued the conservation effort. I think conservation isn't a, hey, look at me, I'm conservating, or I'm whatever the word is, like, hey, look at me. It's you're doing stuff without being noticed. You're doing stuff that is a sacrifice. It's not glorious. It's not something you're going to post on Instagram. And we would go after the 4th of July, we would go around to all the public land parking spaces and we would pick up trash and fireworks. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, because kids would go out there, they'd blow up fireworks and they'd leave all their shit all over the place. And we would go pick that up along with some other stuff. And there were times where we were picking up truckloads of garbage through that had been left there. And then we'd go and empty them. But I think from a conservation standpoint, the local, the more local you can give your time and your dollar, the more results you will see personally. But then when it comes to finding a conservation organization that you really click with, whether that is deer, turkey, elk, or shit, birds, bees, pollinators, grasses, they have conservation organizations just about anything out there. Yeah. And so that is where I recommend jumping in and doing a ton of research on what is local. Like for example, Whitetails Unlimited does a really good job of being local, having banquets, getting things involved, getting the community together, things like that. Other organizations that are, I don't want to say white collar, but they're more on the political side, where they're fighting for rights in Washington, D.C. and at the state capitals and stuff like that. You don't get to see that only on the updates that they bring to the table, right?
Right.
So it's all about what you, as the person who wants to donate your time or dollar to, how you want to get involved. Do you want to be in the dirt planting trees and building wood duck houses and looking at the environment and volunteering your time there? Or do you want to be more into, hey, I feel good about this, I donated, I'm a member of this, and my $35 a year goes to whatever it goes to, right?
Yeah.
I think that you got to think about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good point, because I guess we could go with what is technically, you know, back to your original question, conservationist, conservation, what's it mean to you? You know, so are you a conservationist because you hunt? Are you a conservationist because you got your kids involved? Are you a conservationist because you're a member at your local archery club, or you're a Pheasants Forever member? You know, what is the definition of conservationist? And I simply look at it as long as you're doing something for the better of preservation of the land, preservation of the ability to have these outdoor sports.
Yep. 100%. And I think that, again, the net is good on all of these things. I just start to worry about some of these organizations and how much money, like, a lot of times, and I think by law, they might be required to do this, but I'm not 100% sure. They have to talk about what percent of the donation or the dollar that goes actually to projects, because there is a lot, there are conservation organizations out there, or I'll just call them orgs, where people donate their money. And then you see, like, well, 50% of my donation or 70% of my donation goes to actually running the organization. Right. And then only 25 cents or 30 cents of the dollar goes to projects.
Right.
And that's so, where I've become like, dude, I'd rather give my money locally.
Right.
To the conservation board.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge comment with, you know, think about a non-for-profit organization. Mm-hmm. It still takes money to run that organization. Yep. So if Dan Johnson's paying $100 a year to be a member, $25 a year to be a member, there's only a certain percentage that's actually getting used.
Mm-hmm. It's going to running the organization.
Exactly. That's, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. So
yeah.
I think you got to really, like you say, you know, pick and choose your where you're putting your money. You know, if you have a budget, because I mean, face it, everything's expensive. And if you budget yourself to $500 a year for hunting stuff, and if you say, I want a subscription to a magazine or whatever, or I want to join my local chapter of whatever, and you budget that money to $50, well, now pick and choose that. And if I'm going to pick and choose that, I think I want to stay a little more local and around home, because if I don't, that has a faster way of disappearing than one of these big ones.
100%, dude. 100%. So with that said, and it doesn't even have to be deer. I know this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast, but find something that you're passionate about and get involved.
Right.
And that can be a variety of different things. That can be showing up to meetings. And this is where, and this is where I know that I have slacked, and this is where I know I personally want to get more involved. It's just a matter of my schedule and the kids' events and things like that. At the end of every hunting season, sometime between now and the next hunting season, I have to find out when that is. The DNR has town hall meetings.
Yep.
And they have it open to everybody. And so I want to sit in just to see how those are ran. I want to listen to what they talk about and what involvement the hunters are giving them, and realistic information about what's kind of going on, boots on the ground from the hunters, from the local community. And you can get involved there by just showing up and talking and sharing your experiences too. And so it means a whole bunch of different things. And obviously some people have more disposable income than others to donate. But it starts with one step. It starts with doing research on what you're passionate about. Dude, I wonder if there's like a conservation effort for frogs. I don't know why this popped into my head.
You know, it's funny you say that, because as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking like, yes, this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast, but I'm also thinking like, what if you're a conservationist for fish or for birds or for the bees? And now you bring up the frogs and it's like, do you realize how much these organizations help, but could also affect the
overlap.
Other? Yeah. And an overlap, you know, so a great point with it. I don't know that there is one for frogs, but if you're interested in some bullfrogs, feel free to come over this summer and have your pick.
The National Bullfrog Organization. Yeah. We'll have to check that out and get somebody on the podcast to talk about it.
Right. Exactly.
But outside of that, again, do your research, find what you're passionate about. And then whether that is involving others and saying, hey, you know what? I got a lot of access to some land, or I own 500 acres or whatever the case is, you know, I don't know. And you go, you know what? I'm going to invite another person on my property, or I'm going to show up to a meeting, or I'm going to volunteer my time at a local conservation board to do a project. Anything is better than nothing.
And you were talking earlier about picking up trash and stuff like that. And that's the one thing that we take the kids every year, and we'll take the side by side out, and we'll just go up and down these country roads, and we'll pick up trash. The kids get out with buckets and grabbers, and we just pick up trash. And, you know, there's conservation in that. You know, your efforts don't stop there, because then the next time that those kids are on public ground and they see, you know, a beer bottle or can or whatever it may be, they just by habit pick it up now. So.
Yep. Amen. Amen. All right. So, there's a lot of places. Go do your research on how you want to get involved. And this is especially for people who have maybe used an organization through, the National Deer Association or, a Field the Fork or, program or something, whatever one of those programs are. Like, if that program helped you, and got you started, man, I look at that and I go, I would turn around and go right back to that organization so that you can help the next group of people come through, through that. And so, and not just fall into a trap where, well, they got me in and now I, you know, I got my place and now that's all I'm going to do is just, I got in. Now I have my little place. Well, help the next people through. Right. And yep. So that's a little bit of my goal in 2026 is to get a little bit more involved in something, conservation minded and maybe even involve my kids in that. So any final thoughts, Jason?
Man, I don't know. It's bittersweet to see the seasons end like this, you know, you sit there for 8-9 months and you're anxious for the next one, you know, but now's the time to actually start regrouping yourself and start thinking about the fall and make those plans because we're going to be sitting here on application deadlines and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think in a nutshell, it was a really good season. In each day you try to learn something from it. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my friend, have a good day in the classroom, molding the minds of the American youth. Hopefully your stress level doesn't blow your top off, but, Jason,
that's probably a topic for another day because it's
another day for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, hopefully this conversation today that we had, it wasn't too detailed, but hopefully it sparked something that you started to think about on in ways that you can give back. Are you a conservationist? Are you not? What your actions, towards conservation, you know, thoughts and actions are within a given year and really take a look at how you can support in your own way. Because I think the definition of what a conservationist is or getting involved or helping others is an individual's journey. So take that with a grain of salt. Please do us a huge favor. Go to the How to Hunt Deer YouTube channel. It has recently been started. We need as many subscribers as possible to unlock. There's like certain steps that allow me to do some pretty cool creative things once we get past a certain point. So if you're not subscribed to the How to Hunt Deer podcast, please go and do that on YouTube. Go to iTunes or Spotify, subscribe there as well. If you just listen to it, leave a 5-star review, let everybody know that this is an entertaining and educational podcast and a lot more to come in 2026. Jason, thanks for your time, my friend. Everybody else out there, be safe and we'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.